This project is supported by funding from the Institute for Diversity and Civic Life, made possible by a grant from the Henry Luce Foundation.
For some background, the Dallas Mexican American Historical League, DMAL, is a 501c3 organization dedicated to researching, collecting, and preserving the historical and cultural experiences of Mexican Americans in Dallas from the early 1900s to the present.
Through DMAL, the Emerging Historian Cohort is a contingent of young professionals assembled by DMAL lifetime member Rosemary Hinojosa in order to pass on the legacy of preserving our local history to the next generation of historians.
Dejé todo, mis amigos, mi familia y mi ilusión. Y aunque allá he pasado los mejores años de mi vida, decir esto da tristeza, pero acá estamos mejor. Pero acá estamos mejor. Como extraño.
In this episode of the Chronicles of Dallas Barrios podcast, Noah Macias, a then high school student at Sunset High School in Oak Cliff, Dallas, Texas, and Hoven historian of DMAL, interviews his grandmother, sharing the story of how she came to Oak Cliff. I would like to provide a warning for this episode. Noah's grandmother says a word that has been used in the past to describe people with an intellectual disability in order to inflict exclusion. This was something that at the time people wouldn't bat an eye at, but since this word equates intellectual disabilities with being dumb or stupid, it will not be included in this episode and is now considered hate speech. With that context, please listen with compassion and a curiosity to learn about people and their uniqueness, despite the stereotypes society breeds.
I would like to tell you that this interview should take anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes to an hour. Really depends on how fast we go through it, but that's just pretty much the basics. But I wanted to ask, what's your name and where were you born?
My name is Sylvia Mendoza, and I was born in Corpus Christi, Texas in 1953.
Do you have any memories or can you describe the place you were born?
Oh, yes. It was known as being the city by the sparkling sea. There's a great big billboard there that says, "Welcome to Corpus, city by the sparkling sea." And the hospital I was born in was right on the shore.
Wow.
So I was literally born on the beach, on the coastline. And it was I have very, very, very early memories, almost actually an infant. And our lives consisted of going to the beach quite a lot and falling asleep to the sound of the sounds of the palm trees hitting each other at night. It was a beautiful sound.
Maybe that's why we all love the beach so much in our family.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. It's in our DNA.
Do you think, how did your parents end up in Corpus Christi?
I know they were both living in Corpus Christi when they met, that they lived close, like they lived one street over from one another. And there was a small community church there. And I believe that's where they met. I'm not positive, but they evidently, his mother knew her mother. And so they got together and they said that they would make a very good couple, etc. And then one thing led to another. And my father met her, and he loved her and he fell in love with her. And he was like 32 and she was 18. There was a big age difference. It was very miraculous because my mom had some golden wedding rings, and she said, after they got their golden wedding rings, after they got married, their wedding rings turned white, solid white, like white gold. And many people witnessed that. And then a white dove came into their kitchen the day from the window, flew in through the window. I used to have a picture of it. Your mom might have it. Landed on the kitchen floor. So there was a lot of interesting things that happened. And Corpus Christi means the body of Christ. So, you know, it's a pretty awesome thing to be able to say that I was literally born in the body of Christ. That's Latin for the body of Christ. It was a lot of fun living in Corpus. The oil boom was going on. My dad started working at a movie theater. And he ran it. He was the manager. So I saw every Disney movie as they came out. And then the oil bust hit. And lots of people lost money. And Corpus Christi went down. It was a boom town and it went down. So my father, do you have any other further questions, by the way? I don't want to just talk.
Well, I was going to ask, well, I think you're about to answer this one, but do you know, like, when and why did your family decide to move to Oak Cliff?
Well, actually, we didn't move to Oak Cliff yet.
Okay, so there was my dad.
Yes, we went on another journey, very intense journey, from Corpus Christi to California. Because I was five at the time, and my sister Belinda was an infant. And when we got there, it was like paradise, like I've never seen before. It's not the same anymore now. It's not like it used to be in the late 50s, but because I was five, so it had to be the late 50s. I was born in 53. And we got to live there for 2 years in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I believe we lived in Albany or Berkeley. Yeah. I think it was Albany, which is, they're just little tiny little cities. Yeah. They're not big at all like ours. They're very tiny, all kind of crunched together. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of hard to tell if you're in El Cerritos, which is where my tia lived, just a few minutes from where we lived.
Yeah.
Or in Albany or in Berkeley or, you know, where you were. Yeah. But we were right by the San Francisco, the Golden Gate Bridge.
That's amazing.
So and it was a two-story house. So at night I could look out and see the water crashing on the rocks.
Oh, wow.
It was quite an experience. I'll never forget. Never forget. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so y'all moved there because your father, he had a job opportunity or he went to.
Yes, he decided since he was already in, although he said he hated the movie industry. Mm-hmm. He said he hated it. And but he ended up becoming a television repairman. That makes no sense. it makes no sense. You hate it and you're gonna become a television repairman. So he went out there, and that was the only school in the United States where you go be a certified television repairman. It was in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So he went there and he took the course. We were there for 2 years, and there were some of the best 2 years of my life, you know, very beautiful. I got to spend time with family members, original family members, my aunts, my uncles, my cousins from my dad's side. And it was a very unique period in my life. I remember walking down the sidewalks and smelling the aromatic flowers everywhere you went. And there was a lot of botanical gardens in the backyards of people's homes because of all the Chinese living there. But he went to school there and completed his course, which became the reason that we had to migrate to Dallas, Texas.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So you migrated by yourself, correct? Right? But and moved in with your grandmother.
Yes, one of my parents, or I don't know who we got a ride with. Mm-hmm. It's all a fog right now.
Yeah.
They dropped us off, whoever it was, at my grandparent, my mother's, for 6 months, until supposedly, because I was so angry with them. I was only 7 years old, you know. I was a child. Mm-hmm. And I said, how could you dare leave us here for 6 months? Because my maternal grandmother was not a very nice person before she got saved. She was very rough, tough, lean, mean, you know, and these were people that had to overcome being defeated as people. So they were poor, and it was a result of poverty, actually. And so I lived there for 6 months, and I'll never forget that I was so depressed. Even after my parents came back, the depression didn't go away. I used to call it Concrete City. I would tell everyone we moved to Concrete City. And I was telling everyone I hated it because all I saw was concrete, no sand, you know, no palm trees, nothing. And so just recently I was watching some archives on YouTube of Dallas. And would you believe that in the 1940s, it was known as Concrete City?
Wow. And it was you pioneered the name.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. It was.
I just found that out.
So I wanted to ask, so you were there, and correct me if I was wrong, but your grandmother did live in the projects, right?
Yes, you were West Dallas.
West Dallas,
it
right.
was the worst place in the world you could possibly pick to live.
Yeah, it was very rough. Yes. I was going to ask, after those 6 months were up, can you tell me how many people in your family did migrate with you?
How many joined us?
Yeah.
Okay, so everybody, my mom, my dad, and at that time, they had Libby. The baby was Libby, and she was 6 months old. She was an infant. So there was six of us.
Oh, wow. It's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. We still had a lot of kids. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask, so you already kind of touched on this, but just to like get it, like just so you can say it again, but like what was your experience like? So in Oak Cliff, like when you originally, when you came, when your parents came, what was it like? What were your first memories like? What did you think? Were you still resentful towards your parents?
It took me a long time to adjust to Dallas or Oak Cliff, because technically West Dallas, some people actually call it Oak Cliff, but it's really, they also call it Ledbetter. I spent about a year there in West Dallas, and that was one of the most depressing times of my life too.
Yeah.
Then we moved into a little house on Idaho, and then things started getting super good as far as us being able to get out and just hang outside and walk down the street and stuff like that. You couldn't do that in the projects.
Yeah.
And there were weirdos over there. Mm-hmm. And so we had also, you know, God always took care of us with some neighbors across the street. Mr. Mackey, I believe it was Mac. His name was Max. Max Barbecue, M-A-C-K Mac. And so he would bring us all. He saw that mom and dad had a whole ton of kids, and we were poor, so they would bring us all the leftover barbecue and potato salad and beans, and so we were very well fed.
Yeah,
and we were in a lower to medium income.
Mm-hmm.
area, and then mom and dad went through lots of marital problems because of the move from California, and my mother changed.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she got her way, she wanted to move back here because of her mom and her sisters.
Yeah.
Mother became more distant, hardly present in the house, and our lives took a turn, well, mine did, for the very, very worst. Then we moved we lived there about a year. I got baptized at the church across the street, Hillcrest Baptist Church. We moved to Wooden Street, where we spent lots of years from age of eight, I think. Seven, eight, all the way up until probably 15 or 16.
Oh, wow. You're there for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. And there were just two bedrooms, one bath.
Oh, it was very small.
And
that many people in your family too. A lot.
Yeah. Mom had two more kids, two more little boys.
Yeah.
That pretty much I had to help raise because he would take off, I don't know, with her sisters.
Yeah, you were like a primary care provider for your family, the main the mama of the house, for a long time. If you other than marital issues and money issues, like, did you face any other struggles, like discrimination or language terrorism, like in school?
Oh, yes. If I said anything, if anyone, there were very few Hispanic kids there. Okay, very few at the school that I went to. It was predominantly white. And I was segregated out with the what we used to call word for someone that had a mental problem or psychological problem or a physical problem where they could not interact with regular kids.
Yeah.
So I was the groups, you know, were the Hispanics, very few. Mm-hmm. I think I only went from the first grade, finishing second grade, all the way to the seventh grade with maybe knowing maybe three Hispanic males total.
Very small, yeah.
And so we were very few. So if you said anything in Spanish, no matter what it was, mm-hmm. you were severely reprimanded or punished or paddled or whatever. And they would, it was, you were not to use your language under any circumstances because, and this is the reasoning they gave, because we could be talking nasty or evil about the teacher and she not know about it.
Yeah.
Why would we do such a thing?
Yeah.
You know, we weren't like that. We're not brought up like that.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then of course, everywhere you go, even to this day, I experience discrimination.
Yeah.
Every store you would go into, if there wasn't anyone there, you would watch like a hawk.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, even after my kids grew up, I couldn't go in any store without watching them, keeping them real close to my feet like little chickens, because they would tell me when I walked in, if your kids break anything, you're paying. You know, and I'm like, okay, but I got used to it.
Yeah.
I got used to it. Yeah. Yeah. Very nasty.
Would you say that, like, because of the way you were treated in school, do you think that had a role into why you didn't, or like there was no you didn't pass on Spanish to my mom or her siblings? Or your kids?
That's very possible. Mm-hmm. But I think I do believe the root of that is that they want to stop all other cultural progress.
Yeah.
And that was one of their evil plans to do so with us, not to let us use our language, to make it seem inconvenient and stupid to pass your language on to your children, because English is the language of the world anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so and another problem with that is, since we were so used to, like Jesse, for instance, to not using our language at home, you ended up not using it with each other.
Yeah, just anymore. it got erased.
Yeah. 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 It got erased. And they did it. They mm-hmm. did it.
Yeah. I want to add, like, at any point in that time you were in Oak Cliff, did you miss Corpus Christi? And,
oh my God.
Crazy amounts.
Oh my God. I could just dream of the beauty that I had experienced and, you know, going to the beach every day if I wanted to.
Yeah.
It was, or if my parents wanted to, mm-hmm. it was quite a blessing that, even though it was just a short 7 years, it was very well worth it. And, there's something about being close to the water for me, maybe for you too and your family. Yeah. I know.
Yeah,
that I guess for everybody calms mm-hmm. your soul. It calms your spirit. It has a rejuvenating effect.
Yeah. Do you know if you could, would you go back now and Corpus Christi?
That's a good question, because it has changed quite a lot, and I found out recently that there is a certain country that's causing a lot of difficulty to our country right now that owns Port Corpus Christi now. They own the actual port there. And that would be the only reason why I wouldn't want to go near there, because as far as living goes, maybe to visit, which I am going next month, I'll go check Corpus Christi out. But because of the very fact that I know that we already have enemies there, that's the only thing that would hold me back from. Other than that, I would definitely go.
Yeah.
I would if I could.
Yeah. So when you were growing up and when you ended up eventually marrying your late husband, is that what the right term is?
Max?
No. Milo.
Milo, my first husband.
Yeah, how was your experience in Oak Cliff then? Was it starting slowly to change? And even over time to Jesse, like how was the experience changing? Raising kids in Oak Cliff, what was that like?
Oh my gosh, it was crazy. Well, it started to change actually in the 60s when we lived over on Wooden. There was a sudden, Ebbie Halliday herself flew to Washington to stop the desegregation because she did not want white kids and black kids going to school together. Mm-hmm. And so they did their, they said they weren't going to do it, but they did it anyway. Mm-hmm. And so what they did was they caused a house busting. And they all, that means that they lowered the price to make it very affordable for people of color to afford to buy. And they did somehow in the apartment complexes, they lowered the rents and you got a whole month free rent first. Mm-hmm. All kind, like you would get a TV. I remember the advertisements, you know, and then suddenly within 6 months, Oak Cliff, where I lived, the part of Oak Cliff, which would be now called East Oak Cliff near the zoo, on the other side of the zoo, became predominantly black. The west side of Oak Cliff was becoming predominantly Mexican, slowly, but surely. Yeah. And then of course, as you all know now, it is predominantly Mexican. And it's the whole face of Oak Cliff has changed.
Yeah.
And I've seen it change in my lifetime. In the over, I lived in Oak Cliff 51 years.
Wow, yeah.
51 years. So I have seen it go through quite a lot of change.
Yeah. If you want to touch upon this, whenever you were much older and when you had already had, when you had adopted your two daughters, adoptive daughters, how was it then? Just to give like a point, that was in the 90s, correct?
Right.
Okay.
That was a very turbulent time for me because I left Jesse and went to Tulsa, Oklahoma for 2 months, 3 months. I couldn't handle the pressure, but the area where I lived there on Clarendon, the Clarendon house, where your mom spent most of her life, was getting horrible. I mean, we lost a kid to overdose on drugs. And so, and I was part of the juvenile detention center chaplain thing for 10 years. And so the crime element went way up. And it wasn't just from Oak Cliff. East Dallas was probably worse, but some of it in definitely Oak Cliff was becoming, you know, harder and harder. And they had to begin to instill laws like you couldn't wear any more t-shirts with like Saints on them or anything because
those
connoted.
I remember my mom telling me about that. I don't remember that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Your mom told you about it?
Yeah. She'd bring up like how bad, well, cause she went to Sunset as well. And she would tell me how bad gang violence was, especially at Sunset, and how dangerous it was, and how they had to, you know, make like laws and things to, you know, to combat that a little bit. But yeah, she definitely talked about that a lot, and how different it is from my experience now.
It is. Yeah. You know, the crime, the gang busters team that worked on this did a very good job, obviously. Mm-hmm. Because we still have gangs, make no mistake, but it could be a whole lot worse. It's not California yet. I mean, if you go to West, have you ever been to, have you seen videos of West LA?
Not, no.
Oh my golly. It is the craziest gang culture you have ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
So I'm very thankful. And I really believe it's because of prayers and it's because of people that are anti-establishers. No, we're anti-immorality, you know, and I think that it has a lot to do with the backbone of the people of Oak Cliff to keep it up the way it has. I'm not saying it's perfect. It isn't. It's far from perfect.
Yeah. No place
but
is perfect.
It's still very livable, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, so looking back at it, how would you describe, how would you put your migration story into a sentence? And after that, how would you do it again? Was it worth it?
Number one, I had no choice. I had to do it. That was my parents' choosing. Had it been my own, I would have stayed in San Francisco, but that might have been detrimental to me because we had not hit the Haight-Ashbury hippie stage yet where they, you know, went totally nuts and lost their minds. Mm-hmm. So it may not have been good for me to have stayed there, you know. So, but from Corpus Christi to San Francisco, I look at my life almost as paradise, you know. And then from Dallas up until now, it's been a war zone. It's been a total war zone. Even my own children suffered from drug addiction. From
A lot of institutional issues that affected our family.
And my brothers too.
And your brother. Yes.
It's been very difficult living in Oak Cliff. As compared to say Belinda, Libby, and Ruth, who did not live in Oak Cliff. We did have a, Rudy did. And look at the effect it had on your cousin, Rudy, you know. So living in Oak Cliff has its ups and its downs. You have to have a very, very, very tight knit family connection or, you know, you might fall prey to what's going on there.
It's actually kind of interesting to look at your younger sisters and how their experiences, they were obviously younger, so they didn't experience the same as you, but, and how that kind of affected their kind of overall place in Oak Cliff, in place in, I guess, Dallas, where, you know, they didn't go through those barriers, so their life was a little bit easier.
Yes. And this is true.
And that, and their kids as well. So like, it's definitely, there's a difference in, I guess, success, if you want to say that, but, they lived a completely different life. It's very interesting to see how that had an effect on us. And I wanted to ask, so we're obviously, we're not immigrants, we're migrants. And we've been in Texas for a while, like you said earlier, we've been intertwined and we have lineage. It goes back a while. It's kind of crazy actually to think about it.
Long.
I wanted to ask you, how would you describe how immigrants and migrants are treated in America today?
Well, they're treated, one of my own sons has been treated like a Mexican since the day he was born. He can't get a good job. All my kids have suffered discrimination. It's been very, very, you know, your mother has been blessed in that she has a very pleasant personality. She's very loving, and that's how I raised her, because that's what we believe in. Everything you see in your mom that is positive and everything you see in me comes from my ancestors, because this is how we believe. But our family has suffered greatly because of discrimination.
So I wanted to ask you, why are immigrants important to the United States, or to any country rather? I guess to America.
I believe because they bring out by the culture that they bring in to this society, they have an effect on everything. They have an effect on our tastes. Everybody loves Tex-Mex food in the whole entire world. That's their favorite kind of food.
It's really good.
That's a fact.
That's
a fact. So I think the immigrants and the migrants have had a beautiful effect on society, even though lots of it is negative. I'm not going to lie about it. There's some evil, but there's evil in every group of people that you have. There's no perfect group of people. So I believe that they have had a very beautiful, they have made my life. They've definitely blessed my life. But imagine, I was telling my husband the other day, because he's from Nepal. He has his own country. And so he gets to look at the United States as a different, totally different thing.
Yeah.
And I said, had they left us alone, had they not defeated our country, can you imagine what this place would look like right now?
It would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. There would be artwork everywhere. There would be restaurants in homes. It would be, if you know anything about the culture about Mexico and what it was like to live before the government came and imposed all these rules and regulations, you would see why. But one thing, I'm very proud to be Hispanic, brown-eyed people, the most intelligent people in the world. And I'm very thankful, even though I didn't get to do the things that I thought I wanted to do, I'm very blessed to have been, you know, born where I was born and gone through the experiences, because I've learned a lot.
I wanted to ask, is there something you want to be remembered for?
My love of people because of Jesus, mm-hmm. My love of Jesus Christ because of people. It's interchangeable, it's a duple entendre, same meaning. Because that's the only thing I want to be remembered for. Because if not for that, there is no future. If not for love, and if not for forgiveness in Jesus Christ, you won't live forever and ever and experience everything that there is for you, because we're supernatural creatures. That's part of our culture, is that to remember, to nurture your supernatural side, to pray and to ask God to lead you and guide you, especially during these days, because we're facing some very difficult days ahead. So
the final question I wanted to ask you, just to sum everything up, is there anything that you would like to share that was really important, or you just feel like needs to be heard by people about your story, about who you are and how you came to be in Oak Cliff, and how that's impacted you?
Well, I like the Indians. I know that my life would be very different if our country had not been taken over, if Texas had not been defeated the way that it was, attacked and defeated. I know my life would have been very, very different. And I sort of sometimes, and my sisters, all of our family feel that way. We sort of feel a little bit upset about that. You know, there's nothing you can do to change history, but it's a part of you. It's something that hurts your heart because you heard the stories and all of that. And sometimes you find yourself wondering what would have happened if things would have been different. You know, and also making the best of life is key to everything that you do. And because I can't tell you that I've had a glamorous life or a beautiful life. I mean, there were, you know, little moments of that I got into to do some things that other people probably haven't gotten to do. But I have no idea what it's like to live like some people, like the people that have taken over this country. And I just hope and pray that, and I have nothing against them, I forgive them completely, that that everyone learns to look within themselves to find happiness, and not within even a culture, within your culture, because you're not going to have it. You're not going to find it. And if Jesus Christ is in you, then that's where it needs to come from, for strength. And that's about all I can say other than that. What was the question again? I'm sorry.
Is there anything else you'd like to share about your journey to Oak Cliff and how that's affected you?
That's what I was getting at. It was a very, 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 very difficult journey, and I'm still on it. It isn't over yet.
Yeah.
But I've learned a lot.
A lot. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, grandmother. That was really beautiful.
I'm glad you liked it.
I really like to learn about, because I've mentioned this before, it's kind of like hard. I mentioned it to my teacher, but it's kind of hard to, you know, get to learn all about your family, but whenever it's kind of like fragmented, and especially like just the things that have happened, the systemic issues that have affected us as like a family, it's just kind of hard to like grasp everyone and get all of the information. And it's really beautiful to hear everyone's story. So I wanted to thank you for sharing that with me. It was really beautiful.
You're very welcome. I love you. Listen, I wish I had done something like this with my parents, because there is so much I wish I could ask them even right now. And I can't.
I'll be the new historian, the family historian with it.
Cool. Because,
it's one of my passions, I think. Track and
lineage. Yeah, well, and it's an important family.
Yeah,
it really is. It goes way back. Our name, I don't know if I told you, I did a study on our name, my names, the name Ramirez, the name Ramos, the name Batista. My mom's last name was Batista. My grandmother's last name on my dad's side was Ramos. And so Ramirez, of course, my dad. So Ramos means branches in Spanish, literally branches. And the word says, the Bible says, you are the vine and I am the vine and you are the branches. And the word Bautista means, goes all the way back to 11th century John the Baptist himself. And so we know what that means. And then Ramirez means wise protector. I love the meanings of our Hebrew names. They're awesome. Beautiful. Yeah, they are.
Well, thank you once again. And I wanted to close this interview with just saying that it was a pleasure to have you. And it's also very important to share everyone's story. So that's what we're doing, is we're gathering people from Oak Cliff, their stories, and we are going to bring it together and create a project. So you'll be a part of
awesome.
That.
Awesome.
And awesome. I'll let you know the further details, but thank you again.
All right.
And I love you. I will see you.
I love you. Time. All right.
Bye, grandmother. Sweetheart. Thank you so, so much.
Okay. Looking forward to seeing you someday soon.
Yes.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Damal would like to congratulate Noah on his graduation from Sunset High School and share that he is studying at Stanford. Next is his high school graduation valedictorian speech.
And now, with great pride, I introduce to you the Sunset High School 2021 valedictorian, Noah Macias. Noah Macias is the third valedictorian to graduate from his family in the past 5 years from Sunset High School. He will attend Stanford University in the fall on a full scholarship. He will double major in biology and Mexican American studies. Please welcome Noah Macias.
We have come together under unprecedented times to unite and celebrate our 2021 graduates and our feats. I would like to start off and truly congratulate the graduates this year in particular. We have done so much with so little. We walked out on Friday feeling ecstatic about our new break, but that evening changed our lives. We lost so much, but gained the lessons we need to cross over into adulthood and flourish. And to those who lost the most, family members, safe spaces, homes, stability, I see you. We see you. We are here for you and want you to know that you are not alone. All of that is to say that we are truly the strongest, most resilient, and most attractive class to have graduated. I would like to thank each and every one of my teachers for helping me truly thrive in their classrooms, getting me where I am today. I would also like to thank my mom, Andrea Ramirez, for giving me the best environment to grow up in, where I was allowed to discover and find who I want to be. And thank you to my father for always giving me another reason to escape the city. I'm just kidding, Dad. Thank you. Seriously. We have learned so much from our time at Sunset. And knowing not the intense calculus lessons we were taught or the insane amount of work we were assigned in history. Thank you, Ms. Gomez. It was more our personal growth. We have learned who we are, how we adapt, and where we stand in this world of uncertainty. As we venture into what we see as the great big sea of unknown, carry those lessons with you close to your chest. Because although we will see the beauties of our future, we will equally struggle and experience loss. But what sets us apart is our ability to bounce back and keep on fighting. Another thing, never forget the place you came from. Do not hide the parts that raised you. You can only go so far without your home. It's the place that centers you. Say with pride that you are from Oak Cliff. Don't let people's looks and judgments weigh. into the grain of society and say that you are more than just a statistic. As many of us cross into universities, vocational schools, or into the workforce, have faith in yourself. It's hard to believe in the possibility of your success, but each and every one of you is more than capable of creating change. And you are sitting here before me, proving my exact words. We have been shaped and molded by our wonderful parents, siblings, Sunset teachers, and friends. Our lives have been greatly impacted by our environments, and it's our time to use that and apply it to our now changing lives. The truth is, no one knows who we will be in a week, or in a month, or in 10 years. We won't ever get to live comfortably with the idea that we are secure in our own future lives. We have to be okay with not knowing what lies ahead. But we can't fear who or what we will become. We can't continue on in our life making every decision with the goal of having a better future. We have to live now. We cannot actively make decisions for our future selves at the expense of our mental health, relationships, or interests. If we don't enjoy what we have now, what will there be to look back on? Do what you love. Spend time with the people that matter most to you, because at the end of the day, there is only so much time we have left. So live every moment of your life being authentically you. And with that, let's graduate.
Bien sabido que no es fácil ser amigo de la ruina. Aquí vengo tras de un sueño que no lo he logrado aún. Que no lo he logrado aún. Me presta vida.